is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show, putting the late night in the CLNS. For those that don't know, CLNS stands for Celtics Late Night Show, and this is a late night show. Unfortunately, the Boston Celtics made us stay up for nothing, ended up losing this game in Portland, 100-94. In the game that Portland controlled for the majority of the game, Boston made a few runs, especially some runs toward a strong run at the end of the game, kept the game close. But there wasn't a quarter that I believe the Portland Trailblazers did not score. Actually, no, I'm lying. The Boston Celtics outscored the Portland Trailblazers in both the third and the fourth quarter, but still was not enough to overcome the Trailblazers in Portland, 100-94. There were some good points in this game, some things that were very encouraging to see from the Boston Celtics, and some things that were not quite encouraging. But before we get to the analysis, and I'll be joined shortly by my man Jack Michael, and that's at Jack_Michael on Twitter, if you want to follow him. He is active in the Boston Celtics Twitter community, so make sure you follow Jack Michael. He'll be joining me shortly to help me analyze this kind of close, I guess we can call it a close loss, a moral victory, maybe not quite close loss for the Boston Celtics as they finish out this road trip, this five-game road trip, 1-4. Dropping to 7-5 on the season. On the converse, the Portland Trail Blazers, they increased to 10-3 on the season. So this was not an easy foe, especially on their home court. This was not going to be easy. So we're going to get to some analysis in just a couple of minutes. But first, we want to remind everybody that this is the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show, a live call-in show for the fans of Boston Celtics. And even if you're not a fan, if you have something intelligent to say, you too can call in to the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show at the toll-free number 347-215-7771. That is 347-215-7771. And if you'd like to get on the air and let us know what you thought about the game, let us know what you think about the Boston Celtics, opine about anything in general, please make sure to dial 1 on your rotary phone, and that will let us know that you are wanting to get on the air live to speak with us. And with that being said, we'd also like to remind all of our listeners that this episode is sponsored by Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, and Aaron Baines. Boston Barber and Tattoo is more than just Boston's most well-known corner barber shop. It's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. So if you want a savage Aaron Baines man bun or a slick hipster comb over like Gordon Hayward, go hit a Boston Barber and Tattoo located at 113 Salem Street in the North End, Boston. And with that being said, I'm going to bring in my man, Jack Michael. Michael, for some reason in my head, I keep wanting to say Michael Jack because that's how I refer to Michael Jackson. It's like Michael Jack, but it's Jack Michael. So we're going to bring in Jack Michael. Doesn't quite have the falsetto voice of Michael Jackson, but he does have a voice for radio. Jack Michael, what did you see in this game that I didn't cover, which is, I'm sure, a lot, other than Terry Stotts' camouflage tie? I don't know if that was BAPE or if it was real Army-issued camouflage, but, I mean, tough loss for the Boston Celtics. They made a run late. They made runs throughout the game, I think. There were several points throughout each quarter where they got close. They were within, 5 points, 26-21 in the first quarter. They were within 7 points, 54-37 at half. It was the third quarter they kind of seemed to get blown out a little bit, but then they made it really close at the end. And it just seems like the Boston Celtics couldn't close out. And before I throw it to you completely, it just seems to be a recurring theme to me when I watch the Boston Celtics is they're close. They're within 4 points, 5 points, 3 points, 2 points, 4 minutes, we're inside of 4 minutes. And instead of looking for an easy basket, it's let's just stand around the perimeter and shoot up threes when nobody's really hot like that except for Jason Tatum, who just got back into the game. Am I wrong about this, or did you see the same thing? Is there something else about this game that caused the Boston Celtics to lose? Because they were tied, I think, like 4 minutes or 3 minutes or something, weren't they?
Yeah, I think a Marcus Morris three ended up tying the game, and that was the only time, other than 0-0, that the Celtics had, tied or led in that game. The Celtics never led in that game. So I think, yeah, you pretty much covered it, and kind of building off your point on the, they'll make these runs. And something that I'm kind of a big believer in is that, in the NBA especially, it's so hard to just, put a run together, a 10-0 run, a 12-0 run, whatever it is. It's so hard to string together that many stops and score that, by the end of it, the guys kind of seem, gassed a little bit. So, and last year, obviously, we saw them put together just a string of games where they, you didn't think they had any chance. And, they ended up winning the game down 20, down 22, whatever. And even the other night in Phoenix, they were down 22 points and ended up coming back and winning the game. But, that does take a toll. And, they can't do that over and over again. So, and you said it, it's kind of a rough loss to feel it, to be that close, to a comeback win and then just kind of have it slip away at the end there. Something that was encouraging to me, though, especially in the second half, was, when Jaylen Brown starts playing downhill, and he really gets out in transition, that's really how we get back into games, because he's gotten so much better as a passer. He's making correct reads, whether it's guys trailing in transition or guys, just kickouts off a driving kick. He's just doing so much better as a passer that if there's one thing that's kind of my takeaway from this game, it was that.
Jaylen Brown's passing, Jaylen Brown getting downhill, Jaylen Brown being another facilitator. And I think that's
– yeah.
That's really what Brad Stevens looks for in his teams. I think ball movement maybe that's just like, just something like so basic to say, but, ball movement is absolutely critical for Brad Stevens' teams. Brad Stevens doesn't really run the ISO, let me everybody clear out, let's let Kyrie Irving do it. Things come within the offense, and I think Kyrie Irving is doing a fantastic job working within the offense, getting his legs back, getting his knees back. They flashed on the NBC Sports Boston. They flashed on the NBC Sports Boston broadcast that Kyrie Irving in his previous five games previous to this game was averaging 29 points plus, shooting 56 from the field and 53% from three. So Kyrie Irving, doing his thing. And then tonight, I believe they said that he scored his average 21 points, had six assists, an incredible five steals. So Kyrie Irving really seems to be doing his thing within the offense. I think he could have shot a little better, but, Kyrie Irving is doing his thing. Jason Tatum, a little bit inconsistent. I'm glad you brought him up. Jason Tatum, a little bit inconsistent, but tonight I think really showed exactly why there was so much hype about Jason Tatum last season, and I think Jason Tatum is going to have – more games like this moving forward. 27 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks for Jason Tatum, who shot 9 for 8 from the field and 5 for 9 from three, was one of the few players on the team. Again, this seems to be a recurring theme that, you know, every time that I cover a Celtics game, the Celtics are shooting like trash from three. If this Boston, I don't want to switch, you know, too many gears and get into too many things, but this is my next question. If this Boston Celtics team can't get its three-point percentage back up to where it was in October, I think they were shooting a little bit better last month. If they can't get back to shooting elite level three, they shot 33% tonight, 14 for 42 to the Portland Trail Blazers, 14 for 36. Is this team going to be able to compete? Is this going to be the team that we imagined it would be if they don't increase, if they don't start hitting these 3-point shots?
Well, I guess the simple answer to that question is no, because, you know, if they're taking 42 three-pointers a game and not hitting, you know, at least, 33%, you know, you figure the effective field goal percentage of that is 50% because you account for the extra point. But 14 for 42 is not, you know, I don't want to say acceptable because I liked a lot of the shots they were getting, but it's not, you know, it's not a great percentage that if you're going to be taking a high volume of threes, like that many threes. So like I said, the simple answer to the question is no, they're not going to be able to compete. But then, you know, you also figure, I also don't know if they could shoot, you know, this bad consistently for the rest of the season. You know, Al Horford was 0-5 from three-point range. This is a guy who's been shooting, you know, high 30s to the 40s in the percentages in threes for the past, you know, 2 years now on, you know, good volume. Jaylen Brown was 1-4 from three. Kyrie Irving was 3-10 from three. You know, it's been a pretty consistent storyline throughout the season so far that the Celtics are generating really good open looks for the team, but just haven't been able to knock them down. And obviously when you take a lot of threes, the kind of the variance in the shots, like, you know, it is tough to shoot this bad for that long though. I'm a believer in, you know, the shots will eventually fall. I think the team is too talented and they're all, you know, obviously NBA players. They're too talented to not, you know, to not shoot well, to not shoot these threes on a consistent basis for the rest of the season. Because they've proven they could do it at the NBA level. Every single one of these guys, you know, Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, Kyrie Irving, you know, you go down the list, they've all proven that they're, you know, league average or above NBA, you know, three-point shooters. So I'm still a believer in that the shots will fall. But if they don't fall, then it's, you know, I've been trumpeting the kind of the change the mix of shots that they're taking point so far this season, where it's like, you know, it seems to me that they're, you know, getting good looks from mid-range, but maybe you want to kind of reduce the amount of mid-range shots that they get, take more shots in the paint. Obviously, close shots are easier than far shots. So, you know, if the threes aren't falling, you know, I'd say it again, change the mix of shots that the Celtics are taking, try to get closer looks.
I definitely agree with that. I think attacking the basket, I don't see that enough, and I you know, don't want to harp on the same point that I brought up earlier in the kind of brief synopsis that I made of the game. But it seems like I've seen this story several times with the Celtics this season, last season, and it usually ends up being games that they lose where the score gets close. I mean, like we just mentioned, Marcus Morris hit a three-pointer and brought the game, you know, got the game tied. Their first and only tie other than the 0-0, as you mentioned. And the next thing the Boston Celtics do after that is just heave threes, heave threes, heave threes. And you're looking at and of course, these are the cumulative stats from the end of the game, so that some of those heaved threes, inside of 4 or 3 minutes in the fourth quarter at the end of the game are included in these stats. But Al Horford, you shot 0 for 5 from 3 and 4 for 14 from the field. Your shot just wasn't hitting, bro. Like, why are you shooting threes, you know, when you're down by, you know, 2 points, you're tied, you're down by 3 points, you're down by 4 points, you don't need that. Kyrie Irving, 3 for 10, you don't need that. Like, there's a Jaylen Brown, 1 for 4, you don't need that. You can, If you're tied, you're down by two, you're down by three, you're down by four, why not attack the basket? You saw good things happen when they did attack the basket, although I recall a couple of missed free throws or a missed free throw. But, you know, you get to the basket, you get some contacts. I think Jaylen Brown did a good job getting some contact. Jason Tatum did a good job of getting some contact down there. Attack the basket when you have the game. I understand Brad Stevens has the system. I understand they get these fantastic, excellent three-point shots that you just look at and you say they're not falling tonight. Something's, you know, not going right, but eventually they're going to start falling because they can't shoot this bad forever. But when you get into the situational basketball, I understand Brad Stevens has his system. But when you get into situational basketball, down, you know, inside 4 minutes, down inside 3 minutes, and the game is within reach, look for good shots. Chip into that. They were getting stops. They were forcing turnovers. The Portland Trail Blazers were missing shots, other than Al Farouq Aminu, who suddenly decided to become a sniper from three when, you know, it hurt the Boston Celtics the most. But I mean, they were forcing, you know, tough shots, forcing turnovers, forcing missed shots, offensive fouls. You know, Nurkic almost completely steamrolled Kyrie Irving. They were forcing stops. If they could have converted those stops into 2-point baskets instead of I'm just going to swing the ball around the perimeter or drive and kick, which is another issue that I'm going to be discussing later when I bring up another player that I want to talk about. But do you notice the same thing with me? Like, why don't they, you know, understand the situational basketball and get those easy baskets? And this game could have, you know, had a different. It seems like they just make things hard on themselves by not, you know, adjusting to those circumstances. Is it really? I don't believe that Brad Stevens is that type of coach that's really going to say, this is my system, we have to run it, get those good-looking threes. Even if you had, you know, you couldn't, you know, drop a pebble in the ocean, keep taking those threes. I don't believe Brad Stevens is that hard line of a coach that he's saying that. I think they could have, in those closing minutes, found some easier shots, some shots that are more reliable. What do you think? What do you think about that, given how they shot tonight? Not given how they can shoot or how they potentially will shoot or we expect them to shoot in the future, but how they shot tonight. Do you agree that they probably could have gotten some easier shots down the stretch that would have made the game tighter instead of being basically, you know, 6 points with a minute left and that's a wrap?
Oh, no, I definitely agree with you. I definitely agree. And, you know, even earlier in the game, you know, possessions where they got into the paint and the ball touched the paint, you know, then that's where they're kind of in their groove where they can start, you know, it'll touch the paint, but then they'll kick it out and it'll start whipping around the perimeter until they find that good shot. You know, whether it be the layup when the ball touches the paint or if the defense collapses, like I said, they'll whip it around the perimeter until they get a wide open good shot. So yeah, and you had mentioned the free throw thing too. You know, look, going down the list, the Celtics shot 8 of 10 from the free throw line this game. You know, and four of them came from Jason Tatum. Four of the attempts came from Al Horford, and the other two were Jaylen Brown. Kyrie Irving shot 0 free throws in this game. You know, when you have a guy like that can get, you know, to the paint seemingly at will, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say inexcusable, but, you know, almost inexcusable that Kyrie Irving shooting 0 free throws in a game. So, like I said, just possessions where the ball touches the paint should really be the goal for this team moving forward, just because they have so many good players that can hit shots and that can generate a good look, that this team can really just manufacture good shots for almost any player every possession. You know, something that I've been saying is that, you know, when Marcus Morris is out on the floor, he's a guy that's been hitting shots for the Celtics this season. So when he's out on the floor, for some teams, he'd be their second or third best player. But we could put out lineups where Marcus Morris is our fourth or fifth best player on the floor. You know, and when we can manufacture great looks for a guy like Marcus Morris every possession or seemingly every possession, you know, that should be a real positive for this team. So, you know, when the ball touches the paint, everything just becomes so much easier because you collapse the defense, you get them to switch, you force them to rotate. And it just makes things so much easier for the Celtics.
And when you say touching the paint, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to, you know, try to have someone like Kyrie Irving or, you know, Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. You know, not that Marcus Smart necessarily scores all that much or knows how. Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that he has a go-to move. I've been asking for I guess this is the fifth year now, if Marcus Smart has a go-to move and nobody can tell me what it is. But, you know, you don't expect, some of the smaller players throw the ball down into the paint and score over Nurkic. I mean, you know, yes, Jaylen Brown's going to get some dunks like his dunk over Rudy Gobert occasionally. But, you know, by touching the paint, that doesn't always mean take a shot in the paint. That means
correct.
The ball touches the paint, the defense collapses, and then you kick out to kick it out to the perimeter for those great looks or for those threes, or kick it out to the perimeter and then make the extra pass to get those fantastic mm-hmm. looks that Brad Stevens loves. So when you say touch
yes.
the paint, that's exactly what you mean. And I think that, you know, most listeners, I think the CLNS media listeners are fairly intelligent. It's not that,
yeah.
you know, either of us are saying the Celtics need to, you know, take it to the rim every single time. It's get the ball into the paint and then kick it out, especially when you have such talented passes at big men. Al Horford is probably the best
Absolutely.
Passing big man in the game right now. If not one of them, top three, in my opinion, he's the best one that I've seen. But, I don't follow every other team the way I follow the Celtics. But, I mean, even Aaron Baines can make, you know, solid passes out of the paint, you know, when the need be. I've even seen Robert Williams when he gets time in, and I know he's a rookie, he doesn't get to play very much, but I've even seen Robert Williams make some pretty, you know, nice hard passes, you know, out of the paint when need be. So this team, like you mentioned, Jaylen Brown, that's one of the things that clearly he's been working on since last season. He's improved, you know, some aspect of his game. And, you know, when he first got in the league, the dude could barely dribble. It's like he dribbled the ball and it's a turnover because he had no confidence in his ability to move with the ball. He improved on that. Then he improved on his three-point shooting and, you know, his defense got better, even though he always looked kind of like a defensive guy. This season, he's coming out here and he's worked on his passing. When he gets, like you said, going downhill and passing the ball, that's a testament to the fact that everybody on the court, and I think this is the way Brad Stevens, you know, has manufactured this team, has put this team together. Everybody on the court has some type of ability to pass the ball. They may not do it all that much, Marcus Morris, but they have the ability, you know what I mean, to pass it when need be.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, as much as you say, might want to say Kyrie Irving is the ball handler, he's the distributor, he's the guy that's going to initiate the offense, Kyrie Irving initiating the offense isn't going to be the guy that's going to necessarily always get, you know, all the assists, because he may initiate the offense, but the ball is getting touched by, you know, in an ideal possession by all five players on the court, and in an ideal possession touching the paint and then coming back out, or touching the paint for an easy shot, coming back out and then back in. The ball is moving everywhere. There's good ball movement, and that's dependent upon having players they can pass the ball. One of the things, since we're talking about touching the paint and then kicking out, and I've seen this now, and I've mentioned this, and I know a lot of listeners that have heard me before know what I'm going to say. And I'm saying this about this player to lead in to the player that I really want to talk about. I've noticed it with Marcus Smart, and I just mentioned that I don't think Marcus Smart really has, you know, an offensive game to speak of. He can put things together. He's a facilitator, but when it comes to scoring, I think it's basically just a mishmash. Whatever shot he can get up, and sometimes it works, and most of the time it doesn't. When I see Marcus Smart drive into the paint, it seems to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, 90% of the time, he's not looking at the basket when he drives into the paint. As soon as he drives into the paint and leaves his feet, his body is already in the motion of turning to pass to whoever it was that he was going to pass to before. It's like an automatic jump pass as soon as Marcus Smart attacks the rim or attacks the paint, especially from straight on from the front. The thing that bothers me now is that I see the same thing, and I don't want to put too many expectations on the guy because I know he just came off this injury and he's still trying to get into the groove. But I saw Gordon Hayward doing this multiple times tonight as well, driving into the paint and then just not being confident enough in the ability to finish, or not being confident and kicking the ball out. I don't know if for the time being, and the Boston Celtics are going to get better, all of these players are going to get better and work better together, but the Boston Celtics right now can't have two guys on the court that are not confident in their ability to score. Gordon Hayward, I think, can hit those set shots. I think he hit a couple of them tonight from downtown. But the Gordon Hayward that I saw, and I've seen him make improvements this season. There were a couple of games where he just really came out and he looked like he was really flowing. Tonight it looked like Gordon Hayward was kind of a little bit not so comfortable and not so, you know, pleased with his game. Like I saw him going to the bench in the fourth quarter, like midway through the fourth quarter, kind of, you know, shaking his head. Maybe it was that timeout in 5 minutes, kind of shaking his head like he wished he would have made some of those shots or there were some things that maybe he would have liked to have done differently. What's the vibe that you get from Gordon Hayward and Gordon Hayward's game? What are we now, 13 games into the season?
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with you on a lot of it. I think, you know, especially with, you know, an injury of his magnitude, and, you know, a lot of people have said this, and it's going to continue to get said, but, you know, these things take time. It's going to take time for him to get that confidence back, because so much of what it is, you know, it does seem to be kind of his confidence level, because we know Gordon Hayward. You know, he's not a player that's just not looking to score. He's a guy that averaged 20 plus points a game, you know, the previous two seasons when he was in Utah. So, you know, we know the type of player he is. So, you know, until he's allowed to get that confidence level back up, and until he's allowed to get, or not allowed, but until he can get that confidence level back up, and until he can kind of get, you know, back into his groove a little bit, where he feels like he's able to go to the rim at will, where he feels like he's able to go, you know, kind of dunk over guys or even get layups over guys. It's going to be a process, and, you know, not to steal that from Philly or anything, but, you know, it's going to be a process. You got to kind of trust that it's going to work out for him.
And, well, you know, I was going to wait until later in the game where everything's being nowadays, so, you know, later in the game. But later in the show, later in the CLNS Media postgame show, I was going to save the topic for a little bit later because, I mean, I suppose there's a little bit more we could digest about the Trailblazers. But maybe we'll circle back to the Trailblazers and, you know, in some of the, you know, get more deeper into the stats. With the Trailblazers game, again, the Boston Celtics finished off their road trip 1-5, losing to the Trailblazers in Portland 100-94. You mentioned Philly, and I think you know where I'm going to go with the Philly question, because I don't think there's been a show since the Jimmy Butler trade, but if there has, then excuse me for talking about it twice, but me and Jack Michael are going to talk about it again, if you've already talked about it on CLNS Media. Jimmy Butler and some big guy, I guess he's a center, Justin Patton, to Philadelphia for Dario Saric, Robert Covington, Jared Bayless, and a 2022 second round pick. I'm sure that's going to come in handy at some point for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Looking at this, I think it makes Philly slightly better. Because Jimmy Butler is clearly a multi-time All-Star. He's an elite defender in the league, pretty much an elite defender in the league. I think that's safe to say he's an elite defender in the league. Maybe a little bit, you know, of a locker room issue. Don't know. Maybe he and Joel Embiid will not try to have a measuring contest for who is the most alpha of the males in the locker room, or maybe they just get along fantastic. You know, they're two guys that maybe, who knows? I don't know. My take on it is Jimmy Butler's another guy that needs the ball in his hand. I know that I think he's improved his three-pointer throughout his career, but, you know, I wouldn't consider him a sniper by any means. I'd have to check his stats this season to see how he's shooting from three-point land. But he seems like another player that likes to have the ball in his hands, not a player that's necessarily prone to passing the ball. And I also think that the Philadelphia 76ers, Dario Saric, I believe, is a starter. Robert Covington, I believe, was a starter too, or at least the ability to play starter, one of the first men off the bench. And also a defensive stopper, Robert Covington having, you know, I think being known more for his defensive game than his offensive game. It seems to me that Philly probably gave up a little bit too much. You get the star, but where's the depth? I think when comparing them to other teams, you have like the Boston Celtics, they have stars and depth. I think you have the Toronto Raptors, they have, you know, when he plays Kawhi Leonard, you know, an MVP candidate player. So obviously you have a team that's going to be solid. then you have other teams. Milwaukee is a team that's been together. That talent has been together for a while, and Giannis is only getting better. So you have teams that have, you know, good chemistry, teams that are filled out, teams that are maybe not the big flashy names, maybe not Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, I almost forgot his name. I think he might win his third straight Rookie of the Year this year. And Jimmy Butler on Philadelphia 76ers. But who's passing the ball? Who's shooting the threes? Who's being the facilitator? Who doesn't have the ego in that locker room? What do you think? Since you brought it up and we can touch on it now, Jack Michael, what do you think about the Jimmy Butler trade to Philadelphia, and how does it impact the Boston Celtics, the Atlantic Division, the Eastern Conference playoff race? What do you think about the trade?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the surface, it seems like it's a great trade for Philly, right? They get the big name, like you said, you know, they give up, you know, two kind of role player guys. Obviously, yeah, Dario Saric was a starter, but, you know, on the surface, hey, seems like great for them. But from the beginning with Philly, you know, we saw last year, obviously, they finished the regular season so hot. It looked like they were going to steamroll through the Heat, which they kind of did. It looked like they were going to steamroll maybe through the Celtics, which obviously we know how that ended, but, you know, and then to start the season, I think people kind of caught on to the game a little bit, where, you know, it seemed like their issue was more of a roster construction issue, where that, like you said, they have the names, they have the Ben Simmons, they have the Joel Embiid, but past that, you know, what do they have? What is there? So, you know, and that roster construction issue is still there. You know, they do get rid of two guys that, you know, me personally, I'm a big fan of Dario Saric, I'm a big fan of Robert Covington. You know, I think they're really good players, and I think a lot of people, you know, really kind of underrate them. So to get rid of two guys, to bring back one for another guy who's going to have the ball in his hands a lot in Jimmy Butler, for another guy who's going to want to run pick and rolls in Jimmy Butler, you know, when you just brought on Markelle Fultz, who you're going to want to run pick and rolls with most of the time, the roster construction issue is still, you know, there, and it's still a glaring, glaring issue for this team. And I think it'll continue to be a glaring, glaring issue for this team, you know, barring some major trade or major free agent signings by them that really expand the amount of players that they have. But at this point, I just don't see it. So as far as, you know, affecting the Celtics, if the Celtics continue to play like they've been playing, I don't know, maybe we might not even be in that conversation at all. But, you know, if the top two teams in the East right now are Milwaukee and Toronto, I think kind of the tier below them right now is still the Celtics and then Indiana, and then maybe a little behind them still Philadelphia. Because that, like I said, that roster construction issue is still there. They still have the big names. They still have the three guys. But past that, there aren't that many guys that can do much for them. You know, they don't have any shooting to speak of past J.J. Redick. So,
yep.
Like I said, the issue for them isn't going to be the talent. It's going to be the roster construction. And in a playoff series, and, you know, we saw it last season, in a playoff series against the Celtics, you know, you need those guys past three or four guys, the top three or four guys in your rotation, to be able to play well. Because if your big star gets played off the floor in the playoffs, you're kind of stuck.
So I guess we're left still trusting the process is, I guess, the way this is going in Philadelphia. The process is still to be continued. And I think you make
yes.
fantastic points. It's the roster construction. It's the complementary talent that you put around those big names. Because, you know, in today's NBA, when you have the Golden State Warriors, I mean, they have like the whole – you know, USA, you know, basketball team on their squad, you know, having a big three really isn't what it's about anymore. I mean, you have to have you have to have the star talent. And, you know, obviously Golden State Warriors have the star talent, but you also have to be able to go deep, you know, into your bench, or have multiple players, have guys that can come off the bench the way the Boston Celtics have Marcus Morris, the way the Boston Celtics have Terry Rozier, if Terry Rozier could ever get into a groove this season. I don't consider Marcus Smart a guy that does anything offensively for the Celtics as a spark offensively, but he is a spark absolutely when it comes to hustle plays, game-changing plays or momentum-changing plays, and he is a decent or pretty solid, you know, ball handler, ball distributor when it comes to, you know, especially with those lobs, he gets a lot of easy baskets. But you got to be able to go deep with those players, and I think the Boston Celtics have those players to be able to go deep. I'm kind of interested. You don't think that the Jimmy Butler trade even makes Philadelphia any better than the Indiana Pacers? You think the Indiana Pacers are still a better would still be the fourth seed if we're talking, you know, the Toronto 1, Milwaukee 2, Celtics 3. Indiana / Philadelphia, your choice would be Indiana. You would put Indiana over Philadelphia in that fourth seed?
Yeah, I think at this point I still trust, you know, even though we've only really seen Victor Oladipo once in the playoffs, but I really do trust that roster a lot more. And, like, you know, they kind of went along with all the points that we've been making. You know, the construction of that roster is just a lot better. They have guys, you know, 8, 9 guys deep. You know, where they have a guy like Thaddeus Young, who, you know, was an NBA starter for a while. You know, he's essentially their 8th or 9th guy now. And obviously, you know, he's aged and his game hasn't aged as well as, you know, in the current NBA that people would hope. But, you know, he's still a capable NBA player. So it's like when I see a roster like that compared to a roster like Philly's, where, you know, if you take J.J. Redick out of the game like the Celtics did so successfully in the playoffs, it's like, what do they do? Who do they go to? You know, when you have just Jimmy Butler, not Jimmy Butler, well, I guess they have Jimmy Butler now, but when you have Joel Embiid just posting up, you know, 10 possessions in a row and getting single covered, not having any guys to kick it out to, not having any help, you know, it's tough to win in a playoff environment. So, you know, as of right now, you know, I until I'm proven wrong, which, you know, I might be, and then I'll admit it, but until I'm proven wrong, I do trust Indiana, excuse me. Yeah, I lost my train of thought. I do trust Indiana a lot more in the playoffs.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah. Then it's late, you know. Got to cut me some slack here.
it's late. I'm a couple beers deep. I'm a blunt deep. You know, like, you, sometimes you just forget shit. It just happens, you know. It's just the ceiling. It's media post game.
Yeah.
So we like to keep it, you know, official, but we also, you know, like to keep it a little bit, you know, sometimes kind of relaxed, you know what I'm saying? CLNS Media is a credentialed media outlet, you know. So the big wigs like Nick Gelso, the founder of CLNS Media, those guys that are, you know, in the locker room talking to the, you know, to the Celtics stars, talking to, you know, the people that matter in the Celtics universe. Those guys, they can be buttoned up. When it comes to the CLNS Media postgame show at 12:10. On a Veterans Day evening or eve or whatever it is. I'm from South America. We have different holidays for that stuff, but Veterans Day is sometime around here. we can be a little bit relaxed with some of the things that we say. I, you know, to be honest with you, I'm not going to disagree with you. I think the Philadelphia 76ers, they have the names, but I think, just as you said, they don't have the shooting. I think they're missing some key pivotal pieces. They can't go deep, especially when you get into them 7-game series. You got to go deep into that roster in order to make adjustments. And yeah, I'm not sure that I trust Philadelphia. It's interesting, you know, after all the draft picks. I mean, they had what was that kid's name? Nerlens Noel. I wouldn't mind having here in Boston if you could get his stuff together, because I think you'd fit in nice as, you know, a shot blocker. Room. They had Jahlil Okafor. And then, you know, this Markelle Fultz thing, you know, is it too early to call Markelle Fultz a bust? I mean, I know he didn't play that much last season, but, I mean, the guy's shot is broken. He's not, you know, he just doesn't seem, I mean, trust the process, but, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers have had, you know, a glut of, you know, of top picks. I mean, they even rival what Danny Ainge was able to accumulate. Of course, Danny Ainge accumulated them the proper way. He didn't tank the way the Philadelphia 76ers did. But, you know, they've had a glut of, you know, top picks. And half, you know, the majority of those picks, with the exception of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, well, and Markelle Fultz, I guess, you know, if you still consider him there, I don't know. I'm on the fence about, you know, if he doesn't do anything this season, I'm calling him a bust. I don't think he's going to be anything more than an average role player moving forward, but not a guy that you would say, here's a big four, you know, Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Markelle Fultz. I don't see it. You know, before I go to the callers on the 347-215-7771 toll-free Boston Barber and Tattoo call lines, do you think that Markelle Fultz is going to be, Jack Michael, a factor for the Philadelphia 76ers this season, or is he just going to be some guy that comes off the bench to, you know, fill a couple of minutes for Ben Simmons when they need a point guard, even though I think that the little white kid, the little guy that comes in, I forgot what his name is, I'm sorry. What's the name of the little dude that plays?
T.J. McConnell.
When he plays, I'm more afraid of the Philadelphia 76ers than when he's not on the floor, because that guy, he has a little bit of energy, and he's actually a point guard. You know, like, he actually, like, he can, he's a normal point guard, unlike, you know, I mean, Ben Simmons is a fantastic talent, but the guy can't hit a shot from 5 points, you know, near the basket. But anyways, Markelle Fultz is the question. Am I wrong in saying, is that too hot of a take? Am I wrong in saying that Markelle Fultz is a bust already, or would you, are you giving him more time?
I think the Sixers really have to make a choice. Like, if they want him starting, if they want him playing starters minutes, because I trust that he's, you know, a good player. Being someone that was high on him coming into the draft, I trust that he's a good player. But the Sixers have to make a choice. They can't be putting him in, you know, at the end of games if they want to win games. You know what I'm saying? As of right now, at least. You know, like, if they're putting him in, you know, in crunch time, they can't be expecting to win games. On the other hand, though, putting him in crunch time is good for his development. It's going to get him those game reps. It's going to get him in those situations where he's going to have to play well. At least for this season, I think, yeah, you're right. I don't see him being, you know, super useful, anything past kind of just an athletic guy that's going to, you know, give you a couple highlight plays. He'll make a couple good passes, but, you know, he may hit a three here or there. But like I said, I think it really hinges on, they got to make a choice. They either got to, you know, develop Fultz, you know, they got to stick with him, or they got to, you know, glue him to the end of the bench in these high pressure situations, because they can't have it both ways, at least not this season.
And when you have a talent like, what'd you say his name, McConnell? When you have a guy like that, that can come off the bench and, like, actually produce, you know what I'm saying, without any type of, I mean, not that he doesn't struggle to produce occasionally, but you know what I mean, that he can actually produce fluidly on an NBA level, whereas Markelle Fultz, I think we can both agree, is still developing very much so, and the game isn't easy for him. The game is still, you know, at double speed for him, where I think, you know, McConnell is, you know, he's not an all-star, but he's a guy that, you know, you'd like to have off a bench, you know, to come. He does good things. He does fantastic things. Anyways, before we get to the Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771. Jack, we've reached the point in the show where we pay some bills, and I run the pre-read Boston Barber and Tattoo spot, and this is the part of the show that I like to call the Nick Sesento versus Jimmy Toscano. It's the battle of the Italians, because this spot is exactly the same thing that I read at the beginning of the show, the Boston Barber and Tattoo, and I have a competition that Jimmy Toscano probably doesn't know about, but I compete with him over who does the read better. So I'm going to press the button on this read. Our listeners, you can suffer through the next 38 minutes. You know, it's fantastic. Boston Barber and Tattoo is fantastic. It's just, you know, you have to listen to the same read twice, but that's okay. CLNS Media has to pay some bills. So I'm going to press this button. Then I'm probably going to press some buttons on some music. When we come back, Jack, we're going to take some calls. I see Matthew from NYC has been waiting patiently on the lines. So when we come back, we will get to the Boston Barber and Tattoo toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771. Dial 1 on your rotary phones if you want to get into the conversation or if you want to join the conversation. And with that...
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
That That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We are back. The CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show, and we're about to hit up the call lines, the Boston Barber and Tattoo Company call lines at 347-215-7771, toll-free. Dial 1 on your rotary phones if you'd like to join the conversation, as my man Matthew from NYC has already done. Matthew, you're live on the air. What did you think
All
about
right.
tonight's game? You're from
What's
New
up,
York,
guys?
So
yeah, yeah.
The first
I'm a
question
long...
is, you're a Boston Celtics fan, right?
Yeah, yeah. Long. I got my mother was from Boston, so I grew up Celtics fan. So rooting for those guys since the Bird days. But anyway, getting to going into the season, supposedly the second best team in the NBA. Right now, this team looks very flat and very disjointed offensively, and even defensively, they don't look very good. They look good in spurts, but they really just can't seem to get it all together for four quarters. And at times, they look very bad during these games, especially this road trip. They only won one game. They're 7-6 now. Gordon Hayward. You know, I understand what he's coming back from, and everyone does, but he looks bad. His offensive game is bad, and his defensive game is even worse. And he's a real problem out there for the Celtics. He's a real liability. And there's just, I think, the cohesion, you know, between Irving, Brown, Tatum. Horford does not look good at all this year. I don't know if he's nursing an injury, but he looks slow. He looks tired to me. There's just something not right now in Boston. There's something flat, and it just doesn't look right. And as for the Sixers getting Jimmy Butler, to me, that's huge. Absolutely huge. I'm also reading a story now that they're looking into, they're close to getting Kyle Korver. You have a legitimate big three now with Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, and Joel Embiid. Now, again, their egos and whatnot, but then you also have some nice role players. It's, you know, the Celtics don't have that kind of clear-cut big three. They have Kyrie Irving. After that, it's not clear who's the next man up. Right now, Marcus Morris has been our second-best player up to this point. The Celtics, I don't know. I mean, I put a lot of this on Brad Stevens. I don't know what's going on. The message is not getting to the players. There seems to be a lot of guys freelancing a little bit. And it's worrying. You know, this is a team that had, you know, NBA Finals aspirations, and we're 7-6. And we only won one game on the road trip, and we barely won that game. We got lucky and beat Phoenix, but a very easily lost that game, called 0-5 on this road trip. So between what the Sixers are doing and what the Celtics aren't doing, I'm starting to get a little worried. I mean, I understand it's still kind of early, but the last few games, the fact that they really have been getting down so badly, so early, and having to fight their way back, and then getting close, and then making poor shot selections, the whole thing is just like, it's just like, this isn't right. It's frustrating, and it's like, this isn't right. I don't know what's going on here, but they're not gelling. And I don't know if Gordon Hayward is the main reason that players are kind of like whispering in the locker room, like, this guy's really like shouldn't be on the court, and he should be doing something else. But I don't know. But you watch these games, the kickouts, not getting the easy buckets. There's just a lot of weird stuff going on that just, I think it's just a lack of cohesion that I'm seeing, and that's very worrisome for me on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. So, you know, I'll let you guys break some of that down and see if you agree with me. Other than that, I'll be talking to you soon. Hopefully we can talk sometime after a win in the near future. All right? Later, guys.
Matthew, we appreciate the call as always. I believe you told me that you had called in before. Jack Michael, is it 13 games into the season, is it time to press the panic button?
I would say no. I'm kind of always on the kind of the optimistic side. You know, I've said it a bunch of times in the show already. You know, I do think that it'll work out. The talent will find a way to work out. A couple things that Matthew said that I do agree with, though. I do think there does look like they do look a little disjointed out there. And Brad Stevens said tonight after the game, you know, he's putting a lot of it on himself. You know, it takes time for these things to work. You know, it takes time for talent to mesh. And, you know, there is something to be said for maybe not having Gordon Hayward out there at the end of the game. We went over before when we talked about, you know, kind of his driving and kicking and, you know, his unwillingness kind of to go to the paint, but, you know, he still is a talented NBA player. And, you know, like I said, it's just a tough situation right now because you know, in my mind, the Celtics are mostly doing a lot of the right things. It's just a couple key moments in the game where they're kind of straying away from what they should be doing, and then that's costing them a lot. Because, you know, when you saw it in that third quarter and you saw it in the beginning of the fourth quarter when they were storming back into the game, you know, after being down 20-plus, you know, they were doing all the right things. They had, you know, they were whipping the ball around the perimeter, getting good shots. They were hitting those shots, you know, because at the end of the day, if they were just hitting a bunch of their shots, we wouldn't really be having these conversations because they'd be winning the games. But, you know, it's just a tough situation to be in right now because, you know, this is, as Matthew said, this is a team with finals aspirations. This is a team that, you know, was within a couple minutes of the finals last year without arguably two of its top players. And there could be something to be said, you know, maybe rest Al Horford a couple games. He does look a little tired out there. I wouldn't say he looks, you know, demonstrably worse than he's been, but I would say maybe he looks a little tired out there.
Well, in Al Horford's defense, and this is the only thing I'm going to say about Al Horford tonight, because I never really expect, you know, super games from Al Horford. I think Matthew in NYC is absolutely correct that, you know, there is no clear-cut, you know, number two star, at least not until Gordon Hayward, you know, starts to get better. But I think what you're seeing in the disjointedness that you're seeing from this Boston Celtics team is that last season with Gordon Hayward out for the entire season and then Kyrie Irving missing, if you count the playoffs, I believe it was at least a third of the games that the Boston Celtics played, you know, the team had to come together at the end of the season out of necessity. You had guys like Terry Rozier, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, you know, especially Jason Tatum, you know, and Marcus Morris as well, all step up and, you know, become part of this. Marcus Smart, don't want to leave him out. He did his thing, even though it wasn't in scoring. He did his thing in other ways as well. The team, and he did miss a few games at the end of the season fighting with a picture frame, but he was there in the playoffs, and that's what counted, and he made an effective change. Even guys like Semi Ojeleye, these guys came together out of necessity because somebody had to take the reins. Somebody had to do it. And they flawlessly, you know, played off of each other until, you know, the end of that Cleveland series where, you know, the superstar power of LeBron James. I think if that series had been, you know, if all things were equal in the NBA and there weren't, you know, special, you know, things for special players, I think that series probably would have been a little bit different. And I'm not promoting any conspiracy theory. I'm just saying I think that, you know, superstars get superstar calls. That's why you want superstars on your roster. Those superstar calls can, you know, when in the aggregate, when you look at a seven-game series, can, you know, may have swung some things. But regardless, those players had to step up out of necessity, and they did so flawlessly, sharing the ball, finding out who was hot, getting there. This season, it's almost like a reverse engineering of what happened last season, where they're trying to get back that cohesiveness now that Kyrie Irving is back, now that Gordon Hayward is back. I don't know, you know, if Matthew has, if there's anything to what Matthew's saying, and maybe you know something that I don't. I think everybody understands there's 13 games into the season and Gordon Hayward is not coming back, you know, is not going to be in game shape right away for there to be rumblings in the locker room that, you know, Gordon Hayward, man, this dude is trash. He doesn't belong on the court. But at the same time, like you said, there's something to be said about Gordon Hayward not being on the court in the fourth quarter when the team, you know, needs its time. I think that Brad Stevens, you know, and that's perfectly normal. I think what Brad Stevens is doing is saying, hey, slowly bringing Gordon Hayward back into the game. He was on minutes restrictions, probably still on minutes restriction, although I think he played, you know, 30 minutes tonight or something like that. But he was at 20 or 20 something. Slowly reintegrating him back into the team. I don't think that you have to reintegrate him back into the team, you know, in the fourth quarter of a competitive game when you just, you know, laid a stinker on your road trip and this is how you're trying to close it out. There's nothing wrong with leaving Gordon Hayward on the bench at this point in time. Now, talk to me at game 50, you know, somewhere in February or March or whenever, and, you know, and Gordon Hayward still looks like this, then I'm going to say, okay, something, you know, there's a problem. But I think right now, for me, And I'm going to agree with you on this. I'm not normally a positive guy. I'm like usually one of the first guys, my you know, the hair I have left is on fire. You know what I mean? Like, something is happening. No, no. I'm not one of those guys that immediately wants to fire or trade anybody. But I think it's too early to press the panic button. I think there's still too many X factors, and I think they can work those kinks out. I think they can work those kinks out.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, this team is built for the playoffs, and you know, Brad and Danny and you know, ownership, and they see, you know, 82 games in, they see Gordon Hayward kind of being at least, you know, 85% of what he was, you know, or what we signed when we signed him in 2017. And, you know, honestly, if we had 85% Gordon Hayward now, you know, we wouldn't be having these conversations, because we probably had a lot better record than we do right now. So, you know, not to say anything bad about people who are perhaps a little more negative or who are perhaps kind of panicking a little bit, but you know, it is still really early. But even if it was game, you know, 30, game 40, I would still kind of say, you know, just, you know, be patient, kind of just be patient, wait for the playoffs. This team is built for the playoffs, and all of these little bumps in the road will pay off, you know, when Gordon Hayward is back to the player that we hope he could be, and that I think he will be, come April and May.
Well, I think this is the age of player maintenance, I think, and you see it across sports. It's not just the NBA. It's not just, you know, it's NFL. It's player maintenance. We just saw the New England Patriots take a loss today because, you know, Rob Gronkowski, let's save him for after the bye. Let's give him the bye. Let's get some extra, you know, some extra time. The Celtics are doing the exact same thing, especially with players coming off, you know, significant injuries. Gordon Hayward's, you know, the most significant, but obviously Kyrie Irving, you know, getting those metal plates out and, you know, taken out of his knee. You know, that's an issue, getting used back, you know, back used to his knee. Speaking of injuries, before we end the show, because we have about 3 minutes left of live recorded time, so we'll probably just do some final thoughts. One positive thing about the game, Daniel Tice made an appearance. He had a plantar fascia, plantar fascia tear. I guess it's like when you have plantar fasciitis, something in the foot. And I've heard of plantar fasciitis. Which is not a disease, but a disorder or something of, you know, or a strain or an injury of that part of the foot. I've just never actually heard of that, you know, that actual part of the foot that plantar fasciitis refers to, and I guess it's the plantar fascia. So he had a torn plantar fascia, and he was expected to be out 2 to 8 weeks. When I heard torn plantar fascia or torn whatever, as soon as I hear torn and I heard Daniel Tice after just coming off of I believe it was an MCL reconstruction or one of those non-ACL tendons in the knee.
Torn meniscus.
Meniscus, that's it. Yeah. So coming back from a torn meniscus, I'm like, this dude, he's probably out for, you know, indefinitely. 2 to 8 weeks, the guy was back in 15 days playing in the NBA game tonight. And actually, you know, looked pretty spry. He stayed with his man on defense. I believe there was a couple of possessions, smaller guard, not sure, smaller player, not sure if it was McCollum or if it was Lillard. But, you know, kept him on the hip and, you know, prevented him from getting to the basket, forcing passes. Daniel Tice didn't look bad. He was actually part of the unit. He was out on the court in the fourth quarter that made the big run, because the Celtics were down by double digits in almost every single one of the quarters. So they had to make several runs, or they had to make their runs. And I believe Daniel Tice is on the court. So speaking of injuries, nice to see Daniel Tice. Interesting the way they're easing, you know, Gordon Hayward back in and Kyrie Irving back in. Yet we see Daniel Tice
throw him right into the fire.
2 to 8 week injury. Right back in, you know, 15 days later. They said, yeah, he was expected to be in the boot for 2 weeks. He's in the boot for 3 days. So Daniel Tice, Cyborg, Man of Steel, you know, he's, what is it, the Winter Warrior? Is that the German version of Captain America? I don't know. Whatever. You know, he's a cyborg. Right? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know any of that stuff. I don't watch any of the movies or read the comic books, but I know about the pop culture references. Anyways, Jack Michael, it's been a pleasure to work with you tonight. Any last thoughts before we sign out?
Just, I guess the big takeaway from the show, if there is anyone, is just be patient, because it'll all come together. you know, come playoff time. So just be patient.
I agree with that. I think there's a lot of things that need to be incorporated, a lot of, you know, different types of players, but not different types of players, but, you know, players with a multitude of different things that need to be worked out. Some of it is chemistry, some of it is injury, but this team, this is a team that's in maintenance mode right now. So being one game above 700, not a disaster. The road trip could have been better. Ending that road trip with a 194 loss at the hands of the Portland Trail Blazers in Portland was not a positive thing, but there were positive things that came out of this game. Kyrie Irving had a decent game, 5 steals out of him, 21 points. Jason Tatum, 27 points, 8 rebounds, I believe career high 5 3-pointers, and some, like, actually very difficult. He had a step back against Al-Farouq Aminu that was pretty nasty, and I think it kind of inspired Al-Farouq Aminu to then have probably his best 3-point shooting game in a long time to help the Portland Trailblazers seal the game. Al-Farouq Aminu, I mean, he got hit with that nasty step back, and then he decided to become Al-Farouq Sniper. I mean, that dude was just hitting them shots when the Boston Celtics needed them the least. The next game will be Wednesday against the Chicago Bulls in Boston, home sweet home, against a team that is trash. I believe the Chicago Bulls, what is their record? I don't know, but it's I believe it's several games under 500, like 4-6 or 4-7, something like that. So the Boston Celtics should be able to get right Wednesday night. Game that starts at 7:30 Eastern Time, Boston Time, at TD Garden. Signing out for my co-host, Jack Mike, for the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show, and our sponsor, Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street. Stop in for a haircut, stop in for some ink. Y'all have a good evening.